Stage, screen, and TV actress Julie Harris is dead.
She was a Broadway star who won an unprecedented 5 Tony Awards for Best Actress. But TV viewers knew her as free-spirited Lily Mae Clements on the nighttime soap opera Knots Landing. A family friend says Harris died at her home in Massachusetts at age 87. Harris had previously suffered 2 strokes in 2001 and 2010. Her Tony-winning roles ranged from the flamboyant Sally Bowles in I Am a Camera to the reclusive Emily Dickinson in The Belle of Amherst, a one-woman show. Her many movie roles included being James Dean's romantic co-star in East of Eden. I'm Carlotta Bradley.
What's the MTV Music Video Awards without rumor and controversy? Even if the much-hyped NSYNC reunion doesn't happen, tonight's show in Brooklyn could be Justin Timberlake's night since he has 6 nominations. Plus, you can count on Lady Gaga doing something outrageous on stage. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David Nicky Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. I'm a little bummed out because my kids are going back to school tomorrow. And
I don't know why you're bummed out.
Summer is D-O-A. Put a tag on its toe and ship it off. But here we are.
Oh, that's why you're bummed.
We're going to fight it with moonshine and great drinks and great food and all of that.
Lots of great food.
Yeah. First up, Domenica Marchetti is with us. She's got another cookbook, the most prolific cookbook.
Well, you
writer,
say that like it's a bad thing.
No,
it's a great thing.
She's churning them out like I don't know what. It's called The Glorious Vegetables of Italy, and it's a subject near and dear to my heart, so we're going to be talking finocchi and
doesn't
other things.
Doesn't he look like vegetables would be near and dear to his heart?
He does, actually.
Are you suggesting that I am a fat ass? Because that's not very nice. All right, go ahead. Keep going. Remember that when all this is over and the lights are turned off, you still have to live with me.
I know.
All right, go ahead.
I might as well laugh while I can then, right?
That's right.
Okay, so Fluffy Thoughts Bakery is in...
Say that again?
Fluffy Thoughts Bakery.
All right.
Did I not say it right?
Fluffy Bakery.
Okay, Fluffy Thoughts Bakery is in studio. Laura Stuckey has brought in a huge array of cakes that show off the kinds of decor that she can do, which are fabulous. And she brought in a bunch of cupcakes in different stages. And you, my darling, are going to learn how to decorate a cupcake. We're going to do that live on air in just a little bit.
Yeah, right. I'm a real man. I'm not decorating no cupcake.
Yeah, well, you will be in a little bit. And the Jewish holidays are early this year. Sometimes they're late.
Oh, joy for joy.
Sometimes they're
Thank
early.
God.
Sometimes they're late.
Another thing that screws up my work schedule.
They're never right on time. I don't know when that's supposed to be. But anyway, they're in the next 2 weeks. They're coming up, the first 2 weeks of September. And this wonderful organization has come in studio. They're called the Jewish Food Experience. And
sounds
Susan,
like a rock group from Israel.
It does a little bit. Susan Barakas.
Barokas,
sorry about that, is in studio.
She Barokas your name.
She's the project director, and she's going to talk about all the new things that are happening with the Jewish holidays. So we'll get into that.
And drinks. We always have drinks. And today we're going cocktail-centric with Ross Ferrando and Eddie Miner of Tavern 64 Regional Kitchen in Reston. Awesome new restaurant. It's been there a while. The space has been there a while, but this is totally redone. And rejiggered with a local focus. And we're going to be talking old classic cocktails crafted with spirits from small batch providers and distilleries around here.
Mm-hmm.
And Ross and Eddie, to my mind, it always makes sense to get the booze flowing early. So let's talk to you guys. Ross, why don't you give us a lowdown on Tavern 64?
Tavern 64, we're about three months now into operation. We're located in Reston Town Center at the corner of Market and President Street. The concept behind the restaurant's really, really unique to that area, and it should be something near and dear to all of our hearts. It's local sustainable. We're about 95% local for the menu. Very beverage-forward concept for the restaurant. I would say, you know, all of our cocktails included are handcrafted with handcrafted spirits that are from Virginia, local beers, great local beers on draft.
You know, that's cool. If somebody could start elbow crafting cocktails, I think that would be really unique. But, okay.
I think that sounds really stupid.
The craft of the cocktails really is important. And a lot of times it gets lost in the speed of what you need to do for making drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of slow it down a little bit and make quality cocktails with great ingredients and all the right equipment. And we'll have some of those today. So
let's talk about some, because we were talking off air about the kind of liquors that you're using. I mean, you're using a lot of local. I see Catoctin Creek. You have that Applejack. Talk about how you sourced all these products.
We're really lucky because in Virginia, there's a lot of fantastic distilleries in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Catoctin Creek is one of them. We've got Bowman's Distillery, which is very close and local to Reston.
Can we talk a little bit about the history of Bowman's? Because that was really fascinating.
The distillery is actually founded on land that's right in Reston, and it's the original farm for Bowman's is just down the street.
Mm-hmm.
With Catoctin Creek and the local spirits, it's easy for us to come up with great cocktails. And then what we do is the tradition of the American cocktail is central to our restaurant. The food itself is American cuisine. It's local regional cuisine. The cocktails are classic local American cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one we have here is we are making this morning a cocktail with beer. We just finished with Port City.
Is this the Shandy?
This is the Shandy, right.
Okay.
We just finished DC Beer Week with Port City. We released the Maniacal IPA, which is available only in Tavern 64 in Reston. And this is made with a double IPA, and is made with Catoctin Creek Roundstone Rye.
Mm-hmm.
And
it smells potent.
It's a beer cocktail.
I mean, it's
gorgeous.
I dropped
my cigarette in there, and it went up.
Well, when we come back to you guys, we'll talk with both of you about. I want to talk about the glassware that you're using because it's really unique and very pretty.
That's such a girl thing. I want to talk Italia. So Domenica Marchetti is here. We mentioned that she's got a new cookbook out called The Glorious Vegetables of Italy, and it was an inspiration to write this book because, as I'm always happy to tell people, I lived there for a couple of years, and one of
Did you live in Italy for a couple of years?
Yes.
Andy, did you know that David lived in Italy for a couple of years?
Wait. When I'm wooing you and going, Carina, tu sei così bella,
I
lived in Italy.
You have a good
baby,
accent.
Baby. But one of the enduring images of Italy is that wherever you go, you can be in the dinkiest little hill town or in the center of Rome. Every store, every vegetable store, vegetable stand, every mercato has these gorgeous, gorgeous vegetables. And, I mean, it's your story to tell, but they pretty much come from next door, don't they?
They do. And I guess one of the reasons I wrote this book, I'm thinking back to a trip back in 2008 when I was there with my family. We were in the Veneto. We were in Venice. And we just went to the Rialto Farmers Market, and they have this wonderful array of Adriatic seafood. But they also had this incredible display of vegetables, beautiful orange-fleshed pumpkins from the north of Italy, tomatoes from Sicily, artichokes, about a half a different kind of radicchios, you know, just frilly, beautiful chicories. And these vegetables were so beautiful, and they were there in such profusion. And I thought, you know, Italy really is a garden. And it has this reputation in this country, I think, that still persists, that the food is heavy. It's spaghetti
carb-loaded.
And meatballs.
It's carb-loaded. Carby.
When it's very much a vegetable-driven diet.
Yeah, meat is almost an afterthought, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Meat is judiciously served. You know, unless you're eating a bistecca alla fiorentina, which is the big steak. But most of
which
the time...
Which is delicious.
Hey, you know what?
It's
Your
delicious.
Accent is very good. But, I mean, that's, you know... meat was so expensive, particularly after World War II, right? Isn't
well,
that the reason?
Yes, meat was expensive. There were religious reasons for abstaining from meat. In the book, I have a recipe called eggplant meatballs and tomato sauce. And, you know, you roast the eggplant. Oh, it's so good. You roast the eggplant and you scoop out the flesh and you mix it with breadcrumbs and seasonings. And you make little meatballs and fry them and serve them with sauce. And they're just as delicious
Why
as
you
meatballs.
Why you don't make me meatballs?
Eggplant.
Come on.
Well, now that I have the recipe, I know what to do. Well, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about sort of Italy is very seasonal. You know, all the cooking in Italy is very seasonal. So how do you take the sort of vegetables that are available in Italy, make a cookbook out of it, and then bring it to the States?
That's a great question. And actually, it was a lot easier than it might have been two or three decades ago. And the reason for that is pretty much the food revolution in this country and the fact that we have the proliferation of all these wonderful farmers markets. Right. I mean, think of the number of farmers markets we have here
Susan's
in D.C.
Susan's going to DuPont right afterwards.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, things like fennel and radicchio and a variety of tomatoes and all the glorious peppers, you know, rapini, kale. They have, you know, the Tuscan kale, the lacinato kale that you couldn't find.
I mean,
yeah.
Kale is now on every menu,
exactly.
You know, all around the country. But like 5 years ago...
Right. And that brings up another thing because, you know, I had never seen fennel before I went there. And I mean, yeah. And, you know, my family ate artichoke, you know, they boiled it into submission and we drew it through butter and scraped our teeth on it.
I know, but it's really good that way, too.
Did Italy sort of send artichoke and fennel and some of those other vegetables our way?
Because I think they did, actually, because of all of the Italian immigrants. And, this actually makes me think of something really important, which is that Thomas Jefferson, this country's first foodie, grew a huge variety of vegetables, including Italian vegetables, in his gardens at Monticello. And he brought back seeds from Italy and he grew figs. There's a huge fig tree at Monticello that is still there. And he grew, you know, borlotti beans and all kinds of vegetables that people, I think, were a little bit wary of back, you know, 200 plus years ago. But he himself said that he ate meat only as a condiment, and he loved vegetable peas. You know, he always looked forward to the first peas of spring. Mm-hmm. So 200 plus years later, we have people talking about, you know, like Mark Bittman and Michael Pollan talking about reducing the amount of meat we're eating. Well, you know, Thomas Jefferson had that same thought.
You know, he was the first person to say, give peas a chance. I don't know if you know that.
Can you make my next drink stronger,
Domenica?
Please?
Yeah. Just so you know that, then we can move on.
I do know that.
We're going no place.
But I brought you a cake. Do I have a minute to talk about the cake?
Yeah, we have plenty of time.
Okay, great. So I love carrots. Carrots are the workhorse of... you know, of vegetables. They're in everybody's refrigerator bin.
See,
but
I
nobody
wish you didn't
thinks
say
about
what was
them.
In the cake until Tessa tasted it.
Oh, well, Tessa's going to still taste it because it's so good. So I brought, you know, I love to use carrots because I like to showcase them. They're sweet when you roast them. Mm-hmm. I have a recipe in the book for carrot ricotta ravioli.
Yum.
But this recipe I brought is a cake. It's a carrot polenta cake made with olive oil and Marsala wine. Mm-hmm. It's really simple. It's like a one bowl cake. It comes together so easily with just a hand whisk. You don't even have to dirty your KitchenAid for it.
Okay.
And it's so moist and tender. And I would love for you guys to try it.
Before you cut into it, because we're going to take a break in 2 minutes, I'd love to know about the recipes in the book. Like that cake, for example, is that a classic Italian cake? Or, you know, did you come up with these recipes on your own based on your experiences? Or are some of them traditional? Like,
so it's my books are always a mishmash of recipes. Some are family recipes. Some are classics, traditional. Some are recipes that I discover in my travels to Italy. Mm-hmm. Some are Abruzzese because that's where my family is from. It's near and dear to my heart.
Right.
This one's kind of a riff on a classic Italian olive oil cake or a polenta cake. And I just knew that carrots would go well with polenta. They're, you know, and when you slice into it, you'll see the inside, it's a very lovely golden color. And there's the tenderness from the moist carrots and then a little bit of crunch from the polenta.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're killing us. Andy Mitchell, our engineer, also lived in Italy for a while.
Andy, you lived in Italy?
Who hasn't lived in Italy?
Would you stizita for a minute? I can just see him over there salivating. He's got his drool cup is full. Let's cut into this bad boy before we go off the air.
All right, and then we'll take a quick break. Because,
go crazy, baby.
I want to talk about the research that you did for the recipes in the book.
Yes. So, I mean, research happens a couple of different ways. Why don't you cut and I'll talk?
Right.
I can't do two things at once.
Well, if you would.
I try to get to Italy as often as I can. And when I'm there, I obviously pay attention. And so I collect recipes from people who will share them with me. Mm-hmm. I get recipes from my family. And then I come back home in my kitchen and I test them. And like I said, it's a lot easier now because we have all these wonderful vegetables in this country. It's still hard on the East Coast to get things like good artichokes or whatever, but you right. can find them. There's also a wonderful company called Seeds of Italy. So for you gardeners out there, it's they sell a lot of heirloom variety Italian seeds, and they are online at. It might be Italian Seeds or something like that, but it's Seeds of Italy. And so I spoke with the guy who runs that, and we talked about Italian vegetables and growing them and preparing them. And I have a chapter in the book called Gallery of Italian Vegetables, and it's all about, you know, each vegetable. Each vegetable has little profile and information and how to cook it, how to prepare it, how to choose it.
Okay, great. All right, yeah. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how delicious this cake is.
She just cut you off the way she cuts me off when she's not interested in what I'm saying. Okay, great. Yeah, okay, come on, let's go. Let's move on.
That's so unfair. This is David and Nikki Nels for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, Jeremy, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care, then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nels, and also with Domenica Marchetti, who has written a great cookbook called The Glorious Vegetables of Italy. I never endorse anything because I really don't read these cookbooks mostly that we get, but this thing is awesome, and the photography is awesome.
Who did all the pictures?
Sang An is the photographer.
Beautiful.
He's just he did these portrait-like images of the vegetables that are just stunning. I'm so thrilled with his work.
There's a piece of fennel in black tie. I thought it was a very nice portrait. But this cake is great.
It's so easy, too.
But I think we could talk about the fact that we were talking off air about Italian desserts are not classically sweet.
Right. They're not overly sweet. They're not overwrought. They're very simple. Like I said, this is like a one-bowl cake. You just mix everything together with a whisk, and it's olive oil, you know, flour, a little polenta, grated carrots, a little bit of sugar. No frosting, just a light dusting of powdered sugar. And it's sweet, but not too sweet. You know, some people might even add a little bit of rosemary to a cake like this to enhance that savory.
Well, rosemary would be delicious. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I want to jump in. I want to make sure, because we only have a couple of seconds left, that everybody knows how to find your book.
You can find it at my website, DomenicaCooks.com. It's on Amazon. It's in bookstores.
Talk about your book signings, because you have a couple coming
up. Yes, I've got one coming up September 7th at Salt and Sundry.
And Union Market with Amanda.
Yes, with Amanda.
Nice.
She's wonderful. And then end of September, September 28th at La Cuisine in Old Town Alexandria.
Oh, that's such
one of my favorite
place.
Shops. Yeah, yeah.
Fun. Well, congratulations.
All right, again, it's the Glorious Vegetables of Italy. It's Domenica Marchetti.
And love how you say that.
Domenica Sunday Marchetti.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful book. It really is.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in with the cake.
So now we're going to go back to Ross Ferrando and Eddie Miner of Tavern 64. Eddie, let's get you up to the microphone. Tell us how you researched and selected all the local distillers and other folks that you're working with.
Well, that was actually more of Ross's job, being the food and beverage
director. Okay, Ross, never mind. Get Eddie off the microphone. You're fired. Come on.
You know, we just sit back and, you know, he was showing us what he wanted to do for the restaurant and came up with the cocktails, and we just perfected them as we were going along.
So when you guys do the tastings, do you just get all lit up or are you only sipping?
It's fun, yeah. It's a kind of student of the industry, so you get to practice and eat and drink all day long, so it's fun.
That sounds great. So
well, let's talk about some of the glassware, because you served the Shandy in a coupe, which is classic.
Yeah. You need
to be in front of that mic.
The glassware is an important part. You know, so they're craft cocktails, and the cocktails that we do have are American classics. So the first drink that we had was a Shandy, and that was served in a classic champagne coupe, circa 1920s style cocktails, mm-hmm. kind of Prohibition era style cocktails. All the drinkware that we have, they're classic drinks, whether they're unique martini glasses or some of our beer glasses that we serve in mason jars because they're local craft beers. So it's the product is and the presentation for a cocktail is huge, whether it be the garnish or the glassware itself.
Well, let's talk about the most recent cocktail y'all made.
Yeah, so we had mentioned Bowman's Distillery, which mm-hmm. is. And the history of it was from Fairfax County. The farm was actually founded in 1649, which is a good amount of history.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gin based cocktail. Gin is the fundamental cocktail spirit for all of classic American cocktails. We work with some vodkas and we have some local vodkas, but our gin selection is fantastic. We've got gins from Oregon. We've got gins that are the same color as you see for whiskeys, like really aged craft gins.
Mm-hmm.
The one we're using today is Sunset Hills. It's a Pioneer spirit. It's from Bowman's Distillery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mixed with fresh blackberries that are muddled, a little simple syrup, and St. Germain, which is an elderflower liqueur. So this is a gin-based classic style Ricky, if you will.
It's delicious.
All right.
And very, very, it's nice and it's perfect for a morning drink, actually. I don't mm-hmm. think people think of gin. For first thing on a Sunday morning.
Not all people.
But
some people
no,
might.
This is a nice, fruity, light way to start.
As they say, gin is the ultimate flavored vodka, so there's no need to mess around with good gin.
All right, so I'm going to change the subject from gin to cupcakes. I do want to point out that my wife, who hails from northern New Jersey, just said y'all at one point.
Okay.
And I perked up to that one. We've taken you over. All right, so Laura Stuckey, who is the, I guess, founder and owner of Fluffy Thoughts Bakery, is in here, and she has taken...
She's taken over the studio.
She's taken over the studio, but she's taken the concept of cupcakes to Mars and back. I mean, first of all, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Welcome to Foodie and the Beast. Why don't you give us a quick background on you and on the bakery so we get that down.
The bakery's been open. The retail spot's been open for about 4 years, but I've been doing this for about 10 years. I started out of my house, and I went to L'Académie de Cuisine and did the pastry and arts program there. And afterwards, just worked at a couple of bakeries and took some cake decorating courses with some well-renowned cake decorating artists.
And then when did you open your first brick and mortar?
About 4 years ago.
Okay.
In McLean, Virginia.
In McLean, Virginia.
Yeah. And then this year we opened a kiosk at National Stadium mm-hmm. and a few weeks ago at Verizon Center.
Congratulations.
Which
Thank
I want to talk about, which is cool. But Nikki was just at L'Académie yesterday judging.
She was telling me.
Yeah.
They're good friends of ours. So, you know, I read all up on you and what you're known for, aside from great. And my daughter, Tessa's here. She's
controlling.
Which one do you want? Because you're driving me crazy.
We have all the minis over here.
You can have
Pick
a mini.
Something. But you're known for doing some very creative things with...
Well, like this basketball cake. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like
what
it.
What up with that? Yeah. When did you start? I mean, are you a basketball fan? Or you
I am. I'm a huge sports fan. Like, love the Nats.
You're
love
actually
the Nats
a fan of the Wizards, really?
She didn't think who she was a fan of.
I mean, it's okay. I'm just asking.
Yeah. No, but I love the Nats, like huge Nats fan. And we were at a game last year and just realized that there were really nothing else to eat other than cotton candy that was sweet or mm-hmm. ice cream. So we approached them after the season was over about possibly opening something.
That's
up
a brave
there,
thing
know.
To do.
It is a really brave thing to do. But I would. What's the reception been like at the?
It's been great.
The
sports
stadium.
Yeah, it's been really great. Like people.
She
you know,
drove here in a Bentley, so I assume it's been very good.
No. It's been great. People have been you know really excited to have something other than funnel cakes and ice creams. You know your traditional.
What
stuff.
Do you classically? So is it.
We usually, at the stadium we have the jumbo cupcakes mm-hmm. and we have Rice Krispies and brownies, red velvet brownies. We've got cookies, and every game will cater it according to like who they're playing. So if they're playing Atlanta, for example, we'll do like a peaches and cream cupcake. Cool. If they're playing the Mets, we'll do like a black and white cookie. Mm-hmm. You know, so we try to do it like according to like you know the city that they're playing.
Well, no, David. Put that back.
What?
Because you're going to be decorating that cupcake. That's
oh,
fine.
I'm just trying to get
she
my...
She can have one of these
she
over here.
She can have one of the little ones.
My poor underprivileged daughter who never gets a cupcake. Thank you.
There you go. What do you say, dear? Thank you.
Right,
okay.
That's our candy bar crunch cupcake. It's a marble cake with caramel, crunchies, vanilla buttercream. And it's filled with a caramel milk ganache.
Look at her
and
eyes.
Everything...
Her eyes rolled back in her head.
Yeah.
She got zits. Right
everything we make is from scratch, and we only use really high quality ingredients. We don't use boxes or mixes, and everything's made at our McLean location and delivered to the stadiums.
Well, let's talk about some of this decorating that you're doing, because you're doing mm-hmm. very high end, time intensive, and labor intensive decorating on your cupcakes and your cookies and the kinds of cakes you're doing. So, can you explain the cupcake you brought in today?
Yeah. This is it's actually based after a popular Nats player, but for but we're gonna call him our baseball player cupcake, and
it looks like it has a beard.
Yeah, and he has a little beard, and his beard's made out of chocolate, and his little hat's made out of fondant. So everything on the cupcake is edible.
Okay.
And that's what we do. Like anything we do, we try to make everything edible. We try not to use like you know boards and all that stuff. You mm-hmm. know, like and pipes and everything in there. We try to make everything Rice Krispie treats or fondant and stuff so people can eat it.
So, but fondant is very hard to work with, don't you? I mean, I know you do it every day, so it's different. But I mean, it's a tricky.
It can be, yeah. It can be hard to work with, yeah. But
how does it come? It looks like it comes
in kind
big
of like,
blankets.
It comes in a big bucket, and it's kind of like Play-Doh. So it's just like sugar Play-Doh. And
so eating all
like
that
really
Play-Doh when I was a kid was just practice for this.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's really fun to work with. And we've actually started teaching classes at the McLean location.
Oh.
So, so we're going to be teaching cake decorating classes starting this fall.
Oh,
who
that's
was
great.
Your was who is it? Patrice Olivon? Was he your, who's your professor?
No, he's not pastry.
Oh, no, he's not pastry. Roland Mesnier was there.
Yeah,
at one point.
Roland. Yeah. And then Kay, who now owns Willow Restaurant in Arlington,
she was
there.
She's
for
lovely.
Yeah, she was there for the year I was there.
Oh, neat.
And so she was our teacher.
She's great.
And she's great. She's wonderful. So I'm going to give you some of this fondant so you guys could play around with it and stuff. Yeah. But I'll show
you
how to make the hat, for example.
That would be great. I'd love to see how you make the hat. And then I would love to have David try to...
I'm going
to
make a gumball.
Yeah, that's basically what you do. So you're going to make like a little gumball.
Okay. Look.
Yeah, there you go. Look, you're an artist.
Look, I made a worm.
You're a natural.
All right, so...
So you're going to take the ball. You're going to roll it into like a ball. And then you're going to take... You can use a knife, but like, you know, I'm just using a spatula right there and just cut it in half.
Okay.
You know, and so that way you have that shape, you know, the like the baseball hat shape.
Okay.
And so you're just going to keep rolling it around like in your fingers.
So it's very pliable.
It really is.
It's not as stiff, I think, as...
Yeah, we use like a really nice quality mm-hmm. fondant, you know, which is very easy to work with.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've got 2 minutes.
Well, I want you to start.
Right.
Let's finish doing the hat.
And I want to talk about gluten-free, too.
Yeah, we do a lot of gluten-free cupcakes, cookies at the bakery. Mm-hmm. So this is the hat shape. So once you cut it in half, you've got this little shape right there.
And
what you're going to do is you're going to flatten out you're going to take another small piece and just roll it in your hands and just kind of flatten it out.
Right away, fondant!
Yeah. And usually at the shop, we'll roll it out through the sheeter.
Yeah.
So you just kind of like flatten it out like that. And we have some little cutters right there. And you're just going to cut like a little... circle.
No, I'm not. I'm going to do it this way.
You can shape it however you want.
No, I'm doing a badass baseball hat.
And then, place the hat on top of the little circle
there
right there.
Very cool.
And we've got a little stitching tool there so you can like mark, you know, like the little, little stitching on the...
Somebody get a picture of this?
On there. Yeah. So he did a great job.
He's doing
a great
job.
I happen to be a Nats fan.
There you go. All right. So before we take a break, can we get David started on doing the beard?
Well, this is the cupcake that's already iced.
Okay. Okay. So, the beard?
Uh-huh. Yes. And so this is your chocolate buttercream right there to do the beard.
Accidenti, huh?
And you want to hold like kind of halfway through. So you want to kind of pinch it like halfway through. And you're going to start, off like here, like in the middle, and just kind of run down.
And he's never done
like
this
squeeze,
before.
Yeah, perfect. Squeezes. Just like squeeze, squeeze lightly and let go. Squeeze lightly and
Nikki,
let go.
I don't need you kibitzing this action. I'm doing a great job.
He is doing a great
job. You're doing
a
very good
job. But you're going to come down like this, like an upside down V.
See what she's doing?
Like that. So
see how much nicer hers looks than yours?
He's doing a great job. And then down here, and then down
here. You know why husbands die before their wives? Because they want to.
Oh, God.
And I'm just waiting. He's still alive. Okay, on that note, we are going to take a quick break. But when we come back, hopefully David's beard and hair will be done on his cupcake. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We're making cupcakes, and we'll be right back.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com.
Hi, this is Hillary Howard. Join me October 12th and 13th for the Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember. This year we have 55 or 30-mile bike rides held at National Harbor Saturday, October 12th, and a 5K in Washington at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Sunday, October 13th. The Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember raises funds and awareness while commemorating the service and sacrifice of law enforcement officers. Go to rideandruntoremember.org to register today.
Come celebrate Central Farm Market's 5th anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids' activities at two great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The two central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda, Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
All right, we are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're with Lynn Stuckey from Fluffy Thoughts Bakery.
Laura Stuckey. You make fun of me.
Is that your twin sister? I just did a Nikki Nellis. And the cupcake I made looks like...
It looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like I had a stroke in the middle of it. And I might have. So we've got about 2 minutes. Let's quickly talk about the gluten-free thing, because that's bigger than
it's huge.
Yeah. So how do you address it?
Yeah, at the bakery, we offer gluten-free cupcakes every Wednesday and Friday is gluten-free, where we have like a specialty of the day. Like this past week, we had the gluten-free beer and nuts cupcake, which was a gluten-free Guinness cupcake filled with salted caramel with peanut butter and peanut brittles on top.
Yum.
So we do that in regular and in gluten-free so people can, you know, we'll be able to try it.
Are you finding a lot of, not just gluten-free requests, but like... Vegan, are you getting lots of requests? We do sugar-free, we do vegan, we do it all. So, like, when you're doing vegan, what are you using instead of, you know, eggs, butter, and
we use a vegan margarine that we get from Whole Foods, and then we use soy milk instead of milk.
Okay.
We use, like, an egg replacer.
Mm-hmm. And you can still get excellent results.
Yeah, we just use, like, we just copy our recipe, but substituting those ingredients in there, and they work really well.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Like, we did a groom's cake yesterday, which was all vegan. Because the groom couldn't enjoy the wedding cake, so he had his little cake to eat.
So amazing.
I think she should have dumped him, but that's just me.
What's available now.
But at the stadium, we also offer gluten-free options. You know, we do gluten-free minis at the stadium, as well as gluten-free cookies, and the Rice Krispie treats are gluten-free.
So let's talk about you being at the stadium, because I saw you guys there. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting, because there are lots of little kiosks now that are not the generic, classic stadium food. So how do you... What do you think about that? And like, how do you see yourself growing and doing more of that?
It's funny because we've actually been approached by other stadiums like around the country, like to open there. But I think it's great that, you know, that it's not your regular like hot dog and soda kind of thing anymore, mm-hmm. you know, where you can go to the stadium and have a cupcake. You know, you can
realize
have...
a hot dog shaped cupcake would be the thing.
She has one.
We do have
Where?
One.
She has one here for today.
It's outside.
I'm a genius. I'm a little late. I'm behind the curve, but a genius nonetheless.
Yeah, we do hamburger shaped cupcakes,
oh, really?
Hot dogs. Yeah.
Oh, I hate you. Yeah. The whole idea.
It's very, very cool.
All right.
So
well,
now, where can people find you?
At the our McLean location is downtown McLean. It's off of Old Chambridge Road and Section 108 at Verizon Center and Section 135 at National Stadium.
And just quickly, when are you going to start doing your classes? And who are they? Kids classes, adult classes?
Yeah,
what are
the
you
classes
looking to do?
They're kids and adult classes. For example, we're doing a class like teaching how to make a doll cake. You know, the ones where the little Barbie's in there.
Yeah.
Teaching how to make a tiered cake, like a wedding cake. Teaching how to make sculpted cakes, and they're for kids and adults. And in December, we're planning on doing Mommy and Me or Daddy and Me classes, you know, like where you can come in and decorate, like, you know, a cake and also gingerbread houses and stuff. And we'll have all that listed on
the
list.
You'll make sure you send those things.
Where do we find you online?
It's at fluffythoughts.com. We're also on Twitter at ThinkFluffy. And our Twitter is really fun. We post pictures every day of like different cakes and cupcakes that we make.
Cool. Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us here.
Thank you.
Well,
now
we're
going to
go
eat everything.
From talking about one kind of delicious food to another. Susan Barocas is with us.
No, we're going back to the drinks first. That's what the script
Ross
is for, to follow it.
Sure, you got a little lost here. Well, whatever. I had some bourbon. I don't know where I know.
Mint julep coming your way.
All right. Yeah. Awesome.
Look at that. It came my way,
are we
not
sharing?
Your way.
Are we sharing?
No, we're not. I'm kidding. Of course,
I'm driving. All right, so how do you make a classic mint julep?
Well, this is that's a great question. So this is a true classic mint julep. Most people are familiar with mint julep being a bourbon drink, but as history is huge to us and the history of American cocktail and mixology is a big thing for Tavern 64, we've researched the history. The history of the mint julep is actually not a bourbon drink. It's a drink made in the South. Ours is called the Antebellum Mint Julep. It was originally made back in the day. It was made with French cognac and French brandy because of the quality spirits that they had. It wasn't until the Civil War came that the French spirits import was restricted, and they started using local bourbon. So what we've done is we've gone back to that. Again, local spirits, we're back with Catoctin Creek with their 1757 reserve brandy. Again, local Loudoun County Distillery. So we've got a brandy-based mint julep, fresh muddled mint, little simple syrup, crushed ice as it should be. So classic styling with the a truly traditional ingredient.
It's beautiful.
It's delicious, too. It's great.
Presented beautifully, too. It looks great.
All right.
Thank you. Okay.
Ready to talk, Lantzman?
Let's
All right.
Chewy.
So now, Susan Barocas, who's the project director of the Jewish Food Experience, is in with us. And Susan?
Good morning.
Good morning. Before we talk the Jewish Food Experience, for the uninitiated, what really defines Jewish food?
World cuisine.
Yeah.
It really is. Jewish food really is from all over the world. We here in the United States tend to think of it as what is really Eastern European or Ashkenazic. Matzo balls, you know, bagels and lox. And by the way, some of that is also American invention, like cream cheese, which is really...
God bless Philadelphia, I say.
Upstate New York originally, but yes.
Whatever.
So Jewish food really is everything from Persian to Turkish, which is my heritage, all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening now is that people are starting to recognize that Jewish food is much more than what we may
Corn
have grown
beef
up
on rye.
With. Yeah.
Right. So what is the organization doing? Like, what is the purpose of the Jewish Food Experience? Are you just looking to educate people on Jewish food? I mean, how are you guys doing it? What are you doing?
Right. So the Jewish Food Experience was the brainchild of the United Jewish Endowment Fund of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington. Mm-hmm. Got that out. I know, it's a mouthful.
They might shorten that sometimes.
How about UJEF? But you wouldn't know what it is. But what happened is that there was... the organization was looking for a way to kind of build a bigger tent, to bring Jews together, and to also expand the awareness of the Jewish community and culture and what it means. And so they came up with this idea that, everyone loves to eat, everyone's into food these days, and Jewish food is delicious and fascinating and full of tradition. And it also is something that people are starting to really play with, which is very cool.
But you're not supposed to play with your food,
I think. Yeah, no, we do. We like when people play with
earlier,
food. Yes, you did, and it turned out well.
And so how are you spreading this word? How are you guys going about doing that?
So we have two main ways. One is our website, which is jewishfoodexperience.com. Mm-hmm. And every week we update with stories and recipes and places to go. We have articles by actually a lot of people who've been your guests, like Aviva Goldfarb, for example. And Joan Nathan.
Bonnie Benwick,
all of them. They're all involved. And so we have all these stories and recipes. We have a great recipe collection. Mm-hmm. And we're very excited because we just launched in March. Mm-hmm. And you were there, Nikki, at Equinox when we did our launch. Mm-hmm. And we have had over 14,000 hits on our website in like 5 months. So we're just thrilled because we've obviously struck a note. Mm-hmm. Come together, eat, entertain, have people over, play with your food. The other way that we're doing this is through programs. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, we have a number of programs that we're doing, and our calendar is always on the website. Mm-hmm. And if people want to know very quickly what's going on, they can sign up for our newsletter, which only once a week. We don't send you a bunch of new emails. Right. Once a week, we'll send you the update of what's new on the site.
All right. Well, let's start talking about
the holidays.
The holidays and sort of food specifics. Now, I know we're going to talk about Passover Seders in a minute.
No. That's where you're confused. So when we were talking on the phone about the high holidays coming up, the word Seder kept being said. And I was like, no, Seder is only during Passover. But apparently that's not the case anymore.
Right.
So can you explain that?
I would love to. Okay. Well, actually, it's about a
I'm a Reformed Jew. That's why I didn't know.
Except you go to a conservative temple.
Be
but
quiet.
Anyway, go ahead.
Well, actually, the word Seder just means order. And so about 2,000 years ago in the Sephardic world, which is at that Iberian Peninsula and even back into ancient Israel, people started to kind of give a structure to the Rosh Hashanah meal. And there's a number of blessings. There's seven blessings, and it's all, may it be so that, you know, may it be your will, God, you know, that kind of thing, with symbolic foods. And
with the apples and the honey?
The apples and the honey are pretty universal.
Okay.
But what's interesting is, like at my Seder, I don't do just regular apples and honey. Mm-hmm. I also do a candied apple with cloves and cinnamon, which is from my Turkish background.
I'm going to be dipping Fluffy Thoughts cupcakes in honey.
It can never be sweet enough, right?
Everybody should have a sweet New Year. Absolutely. But so the Seder, so when you say Seder, it just means order.
It's the order of doing these blessings in addition to the normal blessings over the challah, the bread.
Because I think people think that Seder means...
One thing.
No, it means like the order of... I definitely thought it meant order, but like order of like... You say the prayers and you're supposed to eat certain food at certain times within the meal. But like when I do a Seder at somebody else's house, their order is totally wrong because it's not like mine.
It's not yours.
Do you know what I mean?
And if it's not Nikki's way, it's wrong. Trust me.
It's like what you were saying about brisket, you know.
Right.
We have our brisket and that's the right way to make brisket, right?
You know what? In our house, like, you know, there are things my grandmother, you know, ran the Jewish holidays. And so we have a lot of those. They're traditions.
Right.
And people get very, like one year I made my own gefilte fish, but it wasn't the jarred stuff. And everybody was like,
you made it from scratch and they complained.
No, it was good too.
Oh,
they're hard
God.
To catch. I'll talk about the bait later.
But you know what I'm saying? Like people are very, and families
very entrenched.
Want their own traditions.
Right. Well, we actually kind of, our tagline or our motto is inspired by tradition and delivered with a twist. Mm-hmm. Because what we want to encourage people to do is to embrace the traditions, but to also look at what makes them exciting and what might spice up what you do, so that you're not just locked into exactly the same thing every single year.
Well, I was going to say, we have, on occasion, we'll have, you know, friends over who are not Jewish who, you know, attend these meals. And the surprise on their face is that they always expect it to be some exotic, bizarre stuff. And it's, you know, brisket's brisket. Good brisket, good wet brisket is good wet brisket and mm-hmm. good, you know, yeah. other brisket. Nikki's brisket is, you know, your eyes roll back in your head. You want to die. It's so good. So
how am I doing?
I'm getting points.
You're getting really a lot of points
on
here.
The air. But, I mean, that's really the interesting thing, that most right. of the foods are just mainstream things done a certain way.
Well, that's not true. Kugel, a lot of people don't know what kugel is.
Kugel is basically like a noodle pudding.
Kugel's a noodle pudding. I want to tell.
Well,
that's Eastern European.
But there's also changes in that even. For example, we have a top 10 list for the high holidays for these coming up on our site. So Todd Gray and Ellen Kassoff Gray. Mm-hmm. So Todd's not Jewish, Ellen is.
They just had a cookbook, the new
They
Jewish.
Have a beautiful yeah. cookbook, absolutely. And when Todd started eating her family's kugel, the famous Kassoff sweet noodle kugel, he went home and started playing with it. So the recipe in the book is actually based on tradition, mm-hmm. but it's got these modern twists, like with cream fraiche. No one's grandmother that we know of used cream fraiche in their kugel.
No.
And even better, you know, you were talking about all the different dietary needs. We have a quote-unquote noodle kugel on our site that is actually made with zucchini noodles.
Which is good. Yeah. Yeah.
It's delicious. And that's one of the things we're also trying to do is to be very responsive. All of our recipes are tagged vegan, vegetarian.
Because it's so different today.
Yeah, low-fat.
I hate you. I know. We take a break.
We're going to come back. We're going to keep talking. No.
How dare you speak, Linda?
I'm going to have a drink of mint julep.
Yes, exactly. Okay. We're going to continue talking the high holidays and cap it off with a great drink. This is David and Nikki Nellis. We'll be right back.
Escape the everyday to the close-by Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. A relaxing getaway just a short drive from D.C., it has an award-winning tasting room, breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge, and the best of Virginia wines, locally grown food, live music, and slow sunsets. Visit earlymountain.com or follow them on Twitter at Early Mountain. Mention Foodie and the Beast and this ad for a free flight of wines at your next visit.
We're all different, but if we all stand up as one, no one stands alone.
Won't you stand up, stand up, stand up?
One by one, we can change the world. It's up to you and me. On Monday, October 7th, let's all wear our blue shirts for World Day of Bullying Prevention.
Won't you stand up and use your voice?
Get your blue shirt at stompoutbullying.org.
On October 4th, the USO of Metropolitan Washington hosts its Star-Studded Stars and Stripes fundraiser at the Sheraton Pentagon City Hotel. Mingle with top government contracting executives, celebrity supporters, and our nation's heroes. Nosh on great food and bid on amazing auction items, all for a great cause. Join as USO Metro announces its 2013 Circle of Stars, honoring top corporate donors for the year. This premier business-to-business networking event helps to fund vital support services for local troops and their families, including programs for wounded warriors and caregivers, children with deployed parents, emergency housing and food assistance, and many other critical programs. USO Metro's Stars and Stripes is presented by AT Solutions. Top sponsors include Boeing, Maryland Live Casino, CenturyLink, Sierra Nevada Corp., and many more. Individual tickets and corporate sponsorships are still available. To learn more, visit WTOP.com. Search charities.
So we are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And during the commercial break, I got Laura Stuckey to agree to, she's going to do a little cupcake of me in my Murray High School football uniform with the number 10 on it. And the legs have to be very skinny. So. Anyway. All right. So quickly, I want to thank the folks that make this show possible, because without you, we're not on the air. Neighborhood Restaurant Group, our friends there. The folks at Founding Farmers, Fishers, and Baker down at the Georgetown Harbor, Union Market, the Black's Restaurant Group, Early Mountain Vineyard, Carpenter's Shelter, the American Land Board, and the Virginia Wine Board. Thanks to all of you. And if you're not an advertiser on this show, what's wrong with you? That's what I want to know. I got to buy that Bugatti. Okay, so let's go back and back to Susan.
Yeah, so Susan, we were just sort of getting into the holidays coming up, and you actually brought up Todd and Alan Gray and their interfaith marriage. How does the Jewish food experience handle that? Because there is a lot of interfaith marriages where people are still
practicing. I can tell you, Todd does what he's told.
Okay. But how is the Jewish food experience working
Well, actually, that's a great question, Nikki, because part of our goal is to bring in people who don't normally connect with the Jewish community. They may be put off for whatever reasons by established...
We're off-putting. We can be very off-putting.
You know? Mm-hmm. So we have like young professionals who move here who are disconnected from their families, who don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we encourage... We even have resources, an article going up this week about where you can go out and have Rosh Hashanah food. We don't say you have to do it at home. We're saying just do something.
Right.
Do something and enjoy it and do it with people you love. We also...
You know what? That's an excellent point. I think it's, you know, because we have older children. They're all back home, thank God, but they weren't for a while. And I think it's, you know, it is important to say
to them...
Why are you
saying thank God? They're annoying.
Stop him. I think it's really important to say that even if you can't sit down at the family table to celebrate the Jewish holiday, for whatever holiday you practice, that you should do something.
Right.
To reflect and appreciate it and do it with people that you love, that you're close with, whether you go out for dinner or you do it in your house.
Right. And you can make new traditions. And that's part of, actually, we have a wonderful story that just went up this week about this idea of creating new traditions for interfaith families. Because we're all about the idea of, you know, what did your family, the non-Jewish partner, what did you eat? And how can that be incorporated into the holiday in this now blended family of an interfaith?
See, in our family, we just make them convert, but no, I'm just teasing.
She's got a conversion machine.
A conversion.
I'm not going there.
Upstairs.
I'm not going there.
She says, come on, let me show you the bedroom.
Well, you know what? If anything's going to get someone to convert, it could be food.
All right. Well, tell everybody how to find you guys online. So
we are at
that.
JewishFoodExperience.com. And
clever.
Yes. Just if you put in Jewish food, we start to pop up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's all kinds of recipes and events happening. And we love to hear from people, too. You can submit recipes also.
Great.
In our collection.
Excellent. All right. Well, please keep us posted on what you guys are doing, because I think it's terrific.
We will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in this morning.
All right, let's go back to Ross and Eddie. You guys... Another drink.
Killing it today.
Another drink. We're gonna squeeze one more in because everybody was eyeballing the moonshine.
I went online and pre-ordered my DUI.
So the blackberry one was like my favorite so far because I love that. But
the mint julep
is delicious.
Mint julep's great.
It's different with the brandy. It's a different twist.
It is really, really nice. It's not as jarring, you know, as a mint julep can be. It's wonderful.
What
do we got
this
next?
The next drink, the one Eddie's whipping up for us, is
slowly stirring.
Stirring is the key. This is
that's what the sadist does. He slowly stirs.
And this is kosher spirits from Kazakhstan.
Mazel tov.
So it all works together. It's fantastic.
L'chaim.
Recipes going up from Catoctin Creek this week, cocktail and actually a cake.
I thought it was called...
Using their liquor.
Fakakta Street.
They Americanized it.
Okay.
So we are, we're again using Catoctin Creek, and it's the Roundstone Rye. It's an organic rye whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a slight version. This is called the Lady Randolph's Request.
Okay.
The name comes from one of several names of where the Manhattan originally got its name. So the drink you're having is actually a Manhattan. We've changed the name because we've slightly changed the ingredients. So we're using the organic Roundstone Rye from Catoctin Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And the real trick for the cocktail is the choice of sweet vermouth that we're using. You see Eddie's
it's delicious.
Lighting the orange there. It releases all the orange from the peel of the orange.
Mm-hmm.
But the spirit itself for the sweet vermouth is Carpano Antica, and that is the best sweet vermouth that
why what
that
makes
you can
it
find.
What makes it the best? What is it?
This is a classic Italian sweet vermouth. It's unlike some of the lesser quality brands that are really made as a mixer. This actual sweet vermouth is intended to be either drank on the rocks or neat.
Okay.
So it's kind of a unique thing where a lot of people don't consider that to be
But I feel like sweet vermouth is making vermouth in general is making a comeback. I think you're seeing it more bars. I mean, more bartenders are using it, but I do think you're seeing it as an aperitif or a digestive. Mm-hmm. Don't you agree?
Oh, completely, completely. You know, cocktails go in trends, and what was popular with the vodka craze and the flavored vodkas and You know, all the different spirits, they all come and go, but the classics are around for a reason. The drink we're having now is a Manhattan. That drink is probably 100 years old.
It's delicious.
I'm still waiting for Boone's Farm and orange juice to come back.
It's coming back.
It's coming back. It's on its way.
Somebody stop drinking it.
Yeah. All right, guys, I want to make sure everybody knows where the restaurant is online and in the real world, so give us that.
Yeah, absolutely. Tavern 64 is located in Reston Town Center. It's at the corner of Presidents and Market Street. So it's in amongst all the great restaurants in Reston Town Center. You can check us out online. It's tavern64.com. Mm-hmm. And please, you can make reservations through our website, through OpenTable.
Okay, one last thing, because I see you did pour the